You're listening to New Churches Podcast, a production of Send Network on newchurches.com. We discuss all things church planting. If you're looking to take your next step toward multiplication, you're in the right place. newchurches.com provides relevant and reliable resources for church planters, church multipliers, and disciple makers. Our growing library features pastors, planters, and church leaders like Ed Stetzer, David Platt, Trillia Newbell, Christine Hoover, Dahati Lewis, Trevin Wax, and many others.
Hey, we're back with another helpful episode of the New Churches podcast. Let me remind you, thenewchurches.com is your one-stop shop. I can't even say shop because it's all free. Everything is free for church planters there. If you go to newchurches.com, we got church planning classes, we got preaching master classes, we got church planning master classes. Again, everything free, and thankful for our partnership with the Send Network that provides all of those opportunities. So this podcast, of course, is among those things that are free and provided. And let me encourage you to leave a review. It helps people to find the podcast as well. My guest today, my returning guest, is Scott Ray. I work with Scott at Talbot School of Theology at Biola University. He's authored 10 books in ethics, is a fellow at the Center for Bioethics and Human Dignity, and he's a professor of philosophy and Christian ethics here as well. We're going to talk to him a little bit about connecting Sunday to Monday. This is an area where he writes on, speaks on, and more. So we're going to jump right into the conversation. Scott, thanks for joining us. Tell us why it's important for pastors to connect their Sunday teaching with the everyday lives of people.
Mainly because we want to ensure that pastors are spending the majority of their time in pastoral ministry on the things that their people are actually spending the majority of their lives on. And my observation over lots of years in many churches is that most churches spend a very small spend a lot of their time on what their people spend a very small minority of their life doing, which is essentially their own sort of personal, private, spiritual life, maybe their marriage and family, but hardly anything on the stuff that they spend most of their waking hours doing, which is in the workplace. And this if you're retired or doing something else that you don't get a paycheck, don't tune out, because there's work for compensation and work for contribution as well. And I'll give you an example. A lot of my Talbot Seminary students are bivocational pastors. And I have never once heard anybody who's a bivocational pastor speak of what they do in the workplace as anything other than a means to an end. And they don't recognize that what they do in the workplace is just as much full-time ministry as what they're doing in the pastorate. It's just a different arena of service. And the Bible's really clear that God ordained work not in Genesis 3, but in Genesis 1 and 2. And what that suggests is that work at the beginning bookend of paradise, and when the Lord returns, we'll still be working too, because the prophets talk about beating swords into plowshares and spears into pruning hooks, which is the implements of war turned into the implements of productive work. So at both bookends of biblical history, we will be working. Work has significant value. Like, I think what the Bible teaches is that our work has intrinsic value and is a part of our service to Christ. Paul is very clear in Colossians 3 that in whatever you do unto the Lord, and in whatever you do, it is your service to Christ. And he was speaking there to household servants, which is arguably the most mind-numbing, meaningless grunt work you can imagine in the first century. Their work had intrinsic value and constituted a part, not all of it, but constitute a part of their ministry, their service to Christ.
Okay, so how would we think about that? So, okay, I think I definitely agree with you that pastors sometimes, matter of fact, I would say that I talk to people in churches who say, I don't think pastors even understand the world in which I live, because pastors are living in a different world. And it is, your vocation is your ministry. Your ministry is often tied up in your life. It's a lot of complications there. So, but pastors, we hear, preach the word in and out of season. So we want to preach the Bible. We don't want to preach, here's how to get along with your coworkers. We don't want to preach, here's how to be a good employee. So how do we balance that we're preaching a biblical text and also dealing with the lives of people who are working, 40 hours, well, at least it'd be nice if people work 40 hours, but dozens of hours more a week, that kind of stuff.
I say if the text applies to those things, then you ought to preach it, regardless. And I assure you that the people in your pews are the ones who are wrestling with those very issues you're talking about. And I think the reason we don't hear much about that in our churches is our pastors are largely disconnected from the day-to-day stuff of life that most of our people experience in the workplace. Now, this is where bivocational pastors have a really significant advantage, because they're in there slugging it out in the workplace too, day in and day out. They understand the ethical issues that people face. They understand the tensions between, you know, working too much and neglecting your family. They understand the ethical dilemmas that are faced in the workplace. So if I were preaching regularly, the way I would do this is I would have a panel of individuals that are representative of different occupations, maybe two or three. At the end of my sermon, I'd leave the last 10 minutes of my message to those people. I'd put them up on stage and have them ask me questions about how this text applies to their workplaces. Okay. Now, I'm not going to know answers to that unless I've talked to them about it beforehand,
right,
or if I visited them in their workplaces. You know, my good friend Tom Nelson, who's pastor in Kansas City for many years, describes his last pastoral visit as one where he scrubbed in. He wasn't visiting a patient. His parishioner was a cardiothoracic surgeon, and he scrubbed in, stood by the bedside for a two-hour surgical procedure. I would have passed out long ago at the sight of him. But he said at the end of it, the surgeon said, no time in my spiritual life has any pastor ever shown this much interest in my work.
Fascinating. Of course, he's known in this space, but I guess the question is how can or should pastors learn about the needs and challenges that people face during the week? What would it look like? The panel might not be a thing that most people can do, but how can they have that beforehand to listen and learn and then use examples?
So I talk to the same people. I'd have a 30-minute conference call on Thursday or Friday of the week.
Yeah.
But here's the big idea. Here's the main points of application. Now help me filter this through your experience in your particular workplace. What do I need to be emphasizing here that I'm not?
Yeah.
And let them talk back to me honestly. I think the other thing too is just the more I'm familiar with what the people who I'm serving are doing during the week, the better equipped I'm going to be able to make application to them.
Yeah.
We had to put an assignment on the books for our seminary students to actually go to somebody in your church, to their place of business, buy their lunch, and then they said, well, what do we talk about? And so we said, here's a list of questions. Here's a list of half a dozen questions you ask them about their work. Yeah. They had no clue what to do. Because we expect the business people to come to our place,
right,
rather than going out to theirs.
Right. And yet, you know, so much of life happens in the workplace. And I think pastors can think about, church planners can think about, you know, how can I illustrate this with a workplace example? I think we're very easy. A lot of times we use family examples, and I'm for family examples. But workplace examples would reframe that this stuff, you know, if we're talking about this doctrine, here's how you're going to live this out, and here's how you might do this in your workplace.
Here's the other thing they can do, and this doesn't take a lot of time, and you can do this on the web pretty easily, is I would peruse on a weekly, biweekly basis some of the top two or three business magazines, Forbes, Fortune, you know, if you have time, the Wall Street Journal, quote from them every once in a while. Forbes and Fortune almost always have some articles that have to do with ethics in the workplace.
Right, sure.
And I think if you quote from them in your sermon, be prepared to have a cardiologist on hand. Because your business people may have a heart attack realizing that, you know, maybe my pastor has something to say about this area.
Yeah, no, I think you know, Tim Keller was the master of that. We've mentioned him a few times since his death, and he would mention things that people in their fields would be engaging. Now, it doesn't have to be something where I'm not an expert in the law, I'm not an expert in engineering, but to just show that I care and that I'm going to try to seek to teach and preach the word of God in a way that applies, people notice And it helps them to say, this is real world stuff. It's not leave all your work behind and come to church where we'll talk about religious things and probably your family, but not your work. So it's necessary to do all of those things, but not always so easy to do all those things. So when you talk about engaging some of these things, how can you encourage people in your church to live faithfully in their workplace? What are some attributes of what that might look like from your teaching and preaching?
Well, I think for one, I'd love to see our preachers apply the fruit of the Spirit to the workplace. And think about it. Who would you rather hire? Somebody characterized by the fruit of the Spirit or by the deeds of the flesh? That's not a particularly tough call. The other thing I think that's really helpful on this is just the more conversations you can have that are that are aimed at the kinds of things that workplace people are dealing with. And I think that the temptation, I think, for many of our church leaders is to think that this is just a white collar thing. That the people who face these things are people who are in C-suites or executives or higher up in management. But I want to have where's the plumber who's in my church? Where's the person who has a side gig in janitorial service? And so I want to make sure that they're represented too. And I certainly don't want to forget moms who stay at home, or women who are trying to juggle some of the challenges of working at a challenging job and having the lion's share of child rearing responsibilities too.
Yeah, it's complicated, and yet I think even the attempt at engaging that workplace will be noticed. I think that's important. So from the pastoral role, the church planner role. So talk to us a little bit about how pastors can encourage their congregation to engage with one another during the week. So it's not just a one-way conversation with the pastor teaching, but there's actually that mutual, Galatians holding one another up, bearing one another's burdens kind of world.
So I think that pastors can have a handful of questions for reflection at the end of their message or at the end of the end of the outline that they put in their bulletins that will help people reflect on the application of the message, and those are the kinds of things that can be used in small groups that meet to follow up. Now, lots of church small groups actually are follow ups on the message from the previous week, going deeper. And if there's time, you can encourage people to talk about these over coffee, over lunch, that particular Sunday, or these are things that you can talk about with your kids at home. Because I think the sooner we get some of this stuff started with our high school and college students, the better off they are. Barner research shows that they are three times more likely to both stay with their faith and stay with the church that they were raised in. If the subject of work and vocation is brought up and taught faithfully in our churches.
Yeah. So, and the more that we really don't just see that, I think one thing we did a research project at Lifeway Research years ago, and we found that pastors sort of saw the sermon as the number one place where people would grow spiritually. But we actually did the research on where people grow spiritually. It wasn't the sermon. It was the discussions and relationships and even small groups that sort of came out of that. So, we want people to dwell in the Word of God, not just to hear it taught and to hear it preached. We'll follow up with that.
Well, I think here's the other thing I would suggest specifically in their preaching is to dignify the work that God's called you to do. And that's the impact of work being ordained in Genesis 1 and 2 and not in 3. Because our work's not our penalty. Yeah, it's fallen. But yeah. God cursed the ground. He right. didn't curse work. Those right. are two different things. And I think most of our people work as though their work is their penalty.
Mm.
That's simply not true. And I think the other thing we can do put it this way. When I ask business people or both people in the workplace, tell me about your ministry in the workplace. Basically, they name church stuff that they try to do in the workplace.
Interesting.
And so when I point out to them, if they list three or four of these things, I point out to them that you realize all these things you are describing to me are things you are doing when you are not doing your job. And the work they do is somehow left out of this conversation of their service to Christ in the workplace. I think it's the majority of it. You know, we don't think about how that the workplace may be the place where we love our neighbor more than in our neighborhood.
Right.
And it may be that simply by the sheer number of hours that our people spend in the workplace, as opposed to the church building, the workplace is going to be the primary place where they're spiritually formed and nurtured. And what I want our pastors to do is in their preaching to help our people get their antenna up so that they can sense what God is doing in their lives through their workplace interactions, how they're being shaped and molded and nurtured, spiritually speaking.
Fascinating. Okay, so talk to us about being more about shaped and molded, what spiritual practice is. We want to move it from Sunday to Monday, which is a theme of our episode, or Monday through Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, is how do we help people to become spiritual self-feeders, to practice and walk in spiritual disciplines? What does that look like?
I think for one, I'd want to see what are people praying about? You know, in fact, if you look at church's prayer log, how many of the things that our churches are praying about have to do with people's struggles in the workplace? My guess is, other than getting a job or coping with being let go, probably not very much. So giving people the freedom to ask for prayer and to pray earnestly about the things that they're dealing with in the workplace, seems to me one of the places we want to start. I'd say the second part is that, Who are my coworkers that I'm praying for? They may be dealing with issues in their lives. I want to pray for an opportunity to connect them with the gospel. In places like our dear home state of California, that's becoming much more challenging than it used to be able to do that. And then I think it's incumbent, I think, on our pastors to explain better than we're doing what is the ministry or the service of the various professions that our people are in. Now, what's the ministry of accounting? What's the ministry of finance? What's the ministry of plumbing? How do these things connect to the flourishing of individuals and communities, to the pursuit of shalom, as the Old Testament talks about? That's something I think needs to come more specifically out of our pulpits. This is where I think, again, bivocational pastors have a huge advantage over pastors who either have not spent significant time in the workplace or are not spending that time at present in the workplace.
Fascinating, important discussion. Scott, any last words for pastors and church planters that just to help make this connection and in and around engage the workplace? We're coming up on the end of our time, but anything else you want to exhort them towards?
Watch your language and the way you talk about your own ministry. Please do not refer to the pastorate as full-time ministry, because that tells the workplace person that they're in part-time or no-time ministry, and neither of those things are true theologically. Watch out for the term secular jobs, higher callings, because neither of those things are true. There is no secular job if the earth is the Lord's and all that is therein. I think making sure that our language matches our theology, to me, is super important. And I don't want anybody telling me that they've left their business to go serve the Lord full time, because you've been serving the Lord full time since you came to faith. That you're now just changing arenas of service.
Scott Ray, fascinating, helpful conversation. Thanks for taking the time on the New Churches podcast.
My pleasure. Good being with you.
You've been listening to the New Churches podcast, brought to you by Send Network. If you like what you heard, take a few minutes to rate and review us or share this episode with a friend. It's the best way to show your support. To find more reliable resources to start your new church well, visit newchurches.com.